This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon, 5 minutes past one on a Saturday, which means we're talking food, we're talking booze. I've got two fabulous people in the studio. I have the very lovely Andrew McConnell, and I have with me Emma Sterling, who is a nutritionist and dietitian. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. Tune in. Yes, we are talking cravings because we do this every Saturday at 6 minutes past one. Pete Dillon with you here on Joy 94.9, taking you through until 2 o'clock before the boys drive in and talk an hour of cars on fender benders. Thank you to the very gorgeous Matt Thompson for the news because he's lovely. And thank you also to Greg on Detours, a really interesting discussion around the Arab Film Festival. So if you've got nothing on your menu tonight, perhaps instead of going out to eat, perhaps you could pop in and see an Arab film. Two guests in my studio today, and I wanted to do a bit of a crossover. Jodie Wilmer on Detours a couple of weeks ago gave me the challenge to dedicate a program to allergies and intolerances in food. And I already knew that I was planning to talk to Andrew McConnell, who is, well, Melbourne's Uber chef, and now I think four premises, but it could be five. He'll correct me in just a moment. He was already coming in to talk about cure for cancer, and I thought, right, I need to get Emma Sterling in. She is a dietitian and nutritionist. She's the dietitian that cooks. So I have both of them joining me in the studio, and I would like to hear from you today. 0427 Joy949. You can email on air at joy.org.au, or you can send a tweet to cravings_joy949. I want to know if you suffer from a food allergy or an intolerance. Emma might be able to answer your questions about that. Of course, we'd always suggest you seek medical advice and see your own GP or nutritionist. But we can certainly do some on-air stuff for you, so send us a message and we will see if we can have that discussion on your behalf. Now I can welcome you. Andrew McConnell, welcome back to Cravings.
Thank you.
And Emma, I don't think we've had you in the studio before.
Not on your segment.
No. Well, welcome.
Thank you very much,
Pete. It's good to
Pete.
Have you in. I sort of wanted to do this, and I think there's going to be some interesting crossovers here because you're a dietitian and a nutritionist that cooks. Andrew, you're probably on the receiving end of people saying, I can't eat this or I can't eat that. I saw a very funny comedy routine a couple of weeks ago by Denise Scott where she sort of doesn't pick on celiacs, but it's quite a humorous little piece she does about celiacs and people with dietary issues. Emma, I'm going to start with you. Are intolerances or allergies on the rise, or do we just know more about them?
Look, really interesting question, Pete, and good place to start. We definitely know anecdotally that more and more people are reporting food allergies and intolerances, and I'm sure all of Andrew's staff will echo that sentiment. There's a number of reasons for this. Number one, people are going to seek help more, so obviously we're getting more people diagnosed. You might have before had a bit of, you know, irritable bowel syndrome and let it go. You know, we were told, oh, that's just stress-related, whereas now we have more diagnostic applications to look into those things. So more people are being diagnosed. And we definitely are seeing a higher prevalence, and we're not quite sure why, you know, particularly with allergens. There's a lot of theories out there. I'm not sure if you've heard of the hygiene hypothesis, Pete, where we're keeping our kids far too clean when they're young, and maybe that's not helping build up strong immunity.
We're not allowing them to play in a sandbox
eat slugs and snails and dirt. That's right. A lot of the immunologists out there will just say, you know, the best thing you can do for your kids is get a family dog and let them pick up some of the germs. So there's a lot of reasons, but definitely we're seeing the increase, and it certainly is putting a lot of pressure on restaurants and food service.
Andrew, are you seeing more of it as a chef and restaurateur that people are saying, I can't have this, or has that got nuts or sesame seeds or milk?
In the last 3 to 4 years, we are seeing more and more, I suppose, dietary requests and needs, which, you know, I'd be lying if I said it was no trouble at all. It is more work, but I think it's not that difficult to accommodate most of these requests.
Mm. Is it, and I have my own theory, is it that we are relying on a lot more packaged food, a lot more food that has preservatives on it, because we all of a sudden seem to be far more time poor, and so we tend to sort of cut corners when we cook.
Yeah, look, certainly, I mean, if you look at the reasons behind, you know, why more people have allergies and intolerances, we really don't have a clear picture. But certainly our whole environment has changed, particularly, you know, our food supply and what we eat. So there's definitely a story there. You know, we also know that people are eating out of the house more and more. So, you know, tracking research shows it's not uncommon to eat out 3 or 4 times a week. I mean, obviously that puts more pressure on if you've got a special diet.
Mm.
You know, fronting up more commonly at restaurant, you know, really being, I suppose, a little bit more demanding as a customer. And you can walk down the aisle of a major supermarket today, you can buy xanthan gum to do your gluten-free baking. You can, you know, the special diet aisle is huge. So I think in respect of, you know, someone on a special diet, they kind of say, well, I can get gluten-free pizza base at Coles. Why can't I get it when I go out to your restaurant? But I think it's double-sided. Restaurants need to ramp up their training and awareness. And I'm sure, you know, I know Andrew's doing an amazing job. But at the same time, I think some of the, you know, patients we see and some of the customers need to be a little bit more respectful when they're eating out. And there's some tips we can, you know, share on that as well.
And about making those right decisions, I mean, you generally know before you arrive at a restaurant that you're going out for dinner.
That's right.
And a simple telephone call is probably the first way. You know, Andrew, there are 4 of us, 2 of us are celiac, or 2 of us are, you know, intolerant to gluten. What's on the menu? And I mean, people should know, because of their intolerances or their allergies, what they can eat.
Well, it helps us with our preparation, and it also ensures, more than likely, a better dining experience for the guest.
Which is
so, yeah, definitely phoning ahead is one of the first things that the dietitians and my team, you know, we talking to patients. I mean, you know, be respectful, phone ahead, ask, you know, at a quiet time in the day, look at the menu before you go. So there's, you know, a lot of things.
Almost everybody has their menu online.
Pretty much now.
Yep, yeah.
Definitely.
So there's, you know, there's a lot of those sort of things. And particularly if you've got I mean, obviously people dining out with a child with a severe allergen, something like a peanut allergen, are very fearful. So they, you know, it's often really a great approach for the whole table to go, you know, peanut free, make the whole table take on that special dietary request. And most people that you're dining with will accommodate that. Much easier for the kitchen as well.
I mean, we, in our household, there's, I have an allergy to a number of things. My partner can't have pine nuts and cucumber.
Oh, interesting. Pine nuts is common, but cucumber not so, yeah.
Well, I'm fiercely allergic to pineapple, which is also not common.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's other bits and pieces that I can't have that, you know, you just know what you can and can't eat. It should be really that simple.
It's interesting, Pete, because it's actually the government have researched this, and so our food regulator, Fezzan's, have looked into it, and we know that they talk about these top 8 allergens. So there's 8 foods that are cover 90% of all the severe food reactions. So,
and they would be crustaceans?
We've got eggs.
Fish, milk, peanuts, soybeans, tree nuts, and sesame
seeds.
That's
right. And so it's actually a legal requirement. Well done, you.
Very clever.
It's actually a legal requirement for cafes and restaurants to declare those allergens to their customers. So if someone comes and asks you, you know, even in your local fish and chip shop, you know, are the chips cooked in the same oil as the fish, so that there could be that cross contact?
Yep.
It's actually, you know, it's up to them to sort of pass on that information by food law.
So Andrew, I'm going to flick, because being a former chef as well, there are some products you simply don't make some products that just come into your kitchens that you use. How difficult is it to know? So if I'm sitting in the restaurant and, you know, I have an allergy to sesame seeds, how difficult is it to know every ingredient of every product that then becomes part of a dish? That must be extraordinarily difficult.
Yeah, we have to. There's an element of care that a chef has to approach, mm-hmm. The way they cook, and I suppose compose dishes.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we've done across our businesses, with the exception of Golden Fields, is we don't use peanut oil or peanuts anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Sesame, for example, seeds we rarely use. Sesame oil, if we use it, will only be used in one dish, in one dressing, and it's labelled and documented.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something we take seriously. And there's a preparation we do each day before guests arrive, where we chart a map. So we prepare a vegetarian menu option,
yep.
Also a gluten free and a dairy free.
Mm. Okay.
So instead of when somebody arrives, and because in this day and age, you know, there's a lot of restaurants that don't take booking, so you can't pre-warn people that you are coming and you do have allergies. It's just a matter of being organised beforehand, so you're not running around at the last minute trying to piece things together.
I want to sort of just talk about your venues just for a minute, because we probably need to properly introduce you. A Melbourne boy, yourself and your brother, very well known on the Melbourne dining landscape. Originally, you had 312.
Yep.
Which was my favourite Melbourne restaurant before it moved, Mrs. Jones and Dining Room 211. And you now have four venues. I think it's four. Cutler & Co., Cumulus, Inc., Golden Fields, and now the Builders Arms in Fitzroy.
Builders Arms Hotel, yep.
That's the newest venue,
yeah.
With your young protégé.
Young chef of the year, Josh Murphy.
How's it going?
Really well, yeah. We've been open for 3 months, the Builders Arms. We opened the front bar and the bistro, and this week we've opened the dining room.
Yep. How's he handling the pressure?
He's handling it really well, actually. You know, we've worked together 9 years, and we work really well together, and we're on the same page, and we've got a lot of similarities in the way we cook. So after working with Josh for so many years, it's actually like he's like a little brother.
Mm.
Yeah, so got a great relationship.
This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9. It is 1:15. We'll have a message and come back and continue our discussion with Andrew McConnell and with Emma Sterling about all sorts of things, really. This is Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Guy Grossi and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
That was a new band by the name of Mrs. Bishop, the track Broken Wing. They are two brothers from Sydney, Oscar and Hugo, and they did recently feature in the 2012 Triple J Unearthed, a very cool song. It is 20 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon. This is Cravings. And in the studio, one of Melbourne's favourite chefs, Andrew McConnell. And also with me, Emma Sterling, who is a nutrition, a dietitian, and somebody who cooks a lot. We're talking about food allergies. We're talking about intolerances. And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. 0427 Joy 949. Send us an SMS. Emma should be able to answer your questions. And if she can't, we can at least refer you to see her perhaps outside. You can email onair@joy.org.au, or you can send a tweet to cravings_joy949. Thank you, Susanna, for yours. We were talking just before about the creation of menus, and that you, Andrew, sort of every day make sure that there is a dairy-free, a vegetarian, a gluten-free. That must be taxing as far as the creation of menus. Is it time-consuming?
Well, when we create a menu, we always accommodate vegetarian options and also vegan options, and from that position it's quite easy to adapt dishes. It's not impossible. It requires a bit of thought and a little bit of research and time, but with the right preparation, I don't think it's impossible.
Emma, what's the difference between an intolerance and an allergy?
Yeah, the golden question.
Yeah.
Well, look, an allergy is really an immune response to a protein in a food. So, you know, with an allergy, you really need to be going to see your GP and then off to an immunologist for proper testing and diagnosis. And most, you know, commonly, the severe allergens, you know, we've heard of that big word, anaphylaxis.
Yes.
So that's that.
I actually thought that was a drag queen.
Well, yes. It does sound a little bit.
Anaphylaxis.
It does sound like Anna. Anna could be quite a good-looking drag queen.
Yes, I'm sure.
You know, obviously anaphylaxis is that awful severe reaction where, you know, you're calling Triple O and you're getting out the EpiPen. You know, you've got breathing problems, you've got cardiac problems. Your body basically goes into shock. Mm. It's thinking that this protein in the food is a foreign substance that it has to just get out of the body as quick as it can.
Is it necessarily a protein?
Yeah, most allergens are from the protein of a particular food. So from the protein in the egg, the protein in the wheat, the protein in the milk, as opposed to an intolerance where it's a body's response to another chemical in the food, or maybe that metabolically your body is lacking something like an enzyme. So lactose intolerance, you know, to the milk sugar, mm. is because people genetically don't have the enzyme to help digest that lactose in their system.
And that gives you a bit of an upset stomach.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely. Mm. But obviously,
I'll keep it nice.
Not generally.
Andrew, I saw the way you looked across the desk.
Come on,
he's not
don't
going
go there. This. Don't go there.
Yeah, look, our dietitians, we could talk about food at both ends, but I think we'll keep it.
Let's try and keep it to the top end, shall we?
But yeah, so an intolerance obviously is less, you know, severe and less at risk for a restaurant because you're not going to have someone, you know, calling the ambulance in the middle of their soup. But often the customer will have a delayed reaction. So mm-hmm. it may be that the next day they think, oh, I've got that migraine today, or you know, sometimes it's from a sulfite reaction, so, you know, a preservative in a food. And they may trace it back to the meal if they thought, oh, was it something that I requested not to have in my meal, but that it was in my meal at a restaurant.
So if, for example, I was eating some blue cheese last night,
yeah.
And I wake up this morning and I'm a little headachy and I let's say, for example, I didn't have a glass of wine, is that something that can happen frequently with things like blue cheese? Is that a sulfite thing?
It can happen, but it's, as I said, it's very individual, and it really is a matter of going to see a professional for diagnosis. I mean, I think with the help of the internet these days, we're all very good at diagnosing now, you know, own medical problems.
Yeah, that's opening a can of whoop-ass that I'm not willing to open because that's just
right.
danger.
So really the first step is to, you know, if you've seen some patterns, there's some really good, actually some apps out there. There's one a couple of dietitians have developed that's called Food?Sick, and it's actually a free app where you can, it's like a food diary, but you can track your symptoms and your what you're feeling in reaction to food to try and see if there is a pattern. But really it's about going to see your GP, getting referred to an accredited practicing dietitian, seeing someone that's credible. You can go onto the Dietitians Association website and mm-hmm. search for one in your area or by speciality. And really, yeah, not certainly as a dietitian, I'm a food lover. I don't want anyone to cut out any foods from their diet if they don't have to. Please don't, you know, start just self-diagnosing and cutting things out of your diet. You know, food is fabulous, and we want to love all our foods if we can and eat them if we can.
I want to jump to something that's completely stupid and ridiculous that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
I thought anaphylaxis was good enough.
No, I've just and then I'm going to come back to a message here I've got from Chris. People cutting out carbohydrates in their diet for rapid weight loss. Is that, give us a yes or no, is that just stupid or is it not?
Cutting out what for rapid weight loss, sorry?
Carbohydrates.
Oh, yeah, look, I mean,
because your body needs
we
them.
We still see the poor old carbohydrate craze, you know, I mean, Atkins, it's the second wave's been and gone, and we still see people that
and then there's
Dukin
and there's South Sea and there's the paleo diet.
The paleo diet is fairly low carb as well, but it's reinvented in a different way. You know, I've always been a food first, you know, dietitian. I believe that really you can, there's no bad foods. You eat all foods, but it's how you, you know, you balance them into your life.
That means I can eat chips more often.
Well, look, there's nothing. I mean, you know, we had fish and chip Friday in our house last night, and everyone jokes because the dietitian always makes the salad. When we go to the other relatives' houses, they all say, oh, Emma's coming tonight, we better make the salad to have with the fish and chips. But, you know, it really, there are no bad foods. So if
I'm putting my chips in aioli, that's...
Well, you know, if it's homemade, hopefully, Pete.
Oh, it's always homemade. I bought aioli.
Good.
That's just an extra lap around the block, isn't it?
It is, it is. Yeah. I do have an absolute weakness for Kewpie mayonnaise from Japan.
Oh, I love Kewpie.
I don't know how bad that stuff is, but God, I love it.
It's got to be nasty for you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's got to be because it tastes that
so
damn good.
We
have a message from Chris. My partner is lactose and fructose intolerant. Can you tell me where to find good recipes for allergy-friendly foods?
Ah, absolutely. Thanks for that question, Chris. Look, we have a fabulous dietitian here in Melbourne called Sue Shepherd, and Sue really has, with the help of Monash University, pioneered a lot of the work in the area of fructose and what we call FODMAP diets, particularly for people with irritable bowel syndrome, but also intolerances. So you can look up Sue Shepherd online. and she has published some fabulous recipe books in that area. And the new one out, the title escapes me, but please have a look at Sue Shepherd's website, because I highly recommend her books. It's a particularly important to source local recipes. The dietary messages are often different overseas, particularly something like celiac disease. Yep. In America, they allow oats on their menus, and we don't do that in Australia. So.
And it's also incredibly important when you're undertaking any diet that you choose fresh and local and seasonal ingredients.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Which we should be doing anyway. I heard a discussion on radio this week around supermarkets, and I'm so not going to a supermarket ever again. We're going to have some messages here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It's 28 minutes past one. We're going to come back and talk to Andrew about an event he's doing with Peter Gilmore and food links to cancer, I think, might be interesting. It is 28 minutes past one.
Hello, this is Alison Moyer. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
I reckon she sounds like a drag queen, and I love Alison Moyer. That's why I play that every week. Pete Dillon with you. This is Cravings, taking you through until 2 o'clock. The boys from Fender Bender will be in shortly thereafter to talk all things cars. But we are talking all things allergies and diets, and I did mention just before we had those messages that, Andrew, you're doing a dinner. Oh, we're doing, actually, it's not a dinner. This is a big-ass event you're doing with the very fabulous Peter Gilmore.
It is a big one.
Who people will know from Key in Sydney. If they are MasterChef viewers, he's the man with the snow egg from a couple of years ago. This is all for Cure Cancer, and you guys are putting together the world's best BYO events.
That's right.
One in Melbourne and one in Sydney. I love this idea. I just love it. Talk us through what the evening looks like.
Well, the Cure Cancer Australia Foundation has been operating since, I think, 1967. Mm-hmm. And for the last 4 years, this is the fifth year of this event, they've been doing the world's best BYO with Key Restaurant mm-hmm. in Sydney with Peter Gilmore. This year, they've wanted to extend the event to Melbourne and have asked us to host and assist in putting on the event.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, for the first time, I've collaborated with Peter Gilmore from Key.
Yep.
I'll be travelling up in 2 weeks and actually in Melbourne first.
Yep.
Peter's coming down
Melbourne on the 16th of July, in Sydney on the 24th.
The following week. So Pete's coming down, and we're putting together a menu together at Cutler & Co. where guests are welcome and encouraged and will be to bringing one of their favourite wines, because everyone's got at least one special bottle at home that they'd like to crack.
And it doesn't have to be a special bottle that is a Chateau Lafite.
No.
It can be, you know, a 2009 little catnook, something or another, something that people love.
Yeah, a lot of those wines don't have to be great wines. And a lot of those wines are quite personal, and you have a connection. It may have been given to you by a friend 3 years ago, or it was
very discovered it on a holiday, romantic holiday.
Yeah, and brought it back home or whatever.
I've been buying it ever since. Speaking of romantic holidays, I have a message that I'm to stop bagging the diets of a particular individual, and no doubt we'll discuss that later when I get home.
You're in trouble.
I'm always in trouble, Andrew. It's only how much trouble is the difference. So tickets are $1,000 a head.
Correct.
And so it's all for Cure Cancer.
It's all for Cure Cancer Foundation.
People will bring... there's prizes on offer for the best sparkling, the best white and the best red that are matched to the dishes that you and Peter are preparing. There's obviously a team of somms who are going to be making those decisions.
Yeah, to assist us, we have probably a team of Melbourne's best sommeliers.
Do you want to run us through who they are?
Sure, we've got Liam, of course, who works with us at Cutler & Co. Matthew Brook from Circa.
I love Matthew Brook from Circa. He is a very nice man.
Isn't he charming?
He's a gorgeous.
He's great.
Love him.
Penny Grant from the Stoke House.
Yep.
Gabrielle Poy from the City Wine Shop. Greg Lightfoot from Union Dining.
Yeah, I noticed you missed Baumgartner.
I was just going to come back to that from the European. I was hoping you were going to jump in there.
Yeah, I've had him on this show. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Thomas Hogan from the Lake House. Yep. Banjo from Attica.
We love Banjo as well. He's just come back from MAD. He's been over with Ben Shuri doing the symposium.
Lucky boy. Jackson Watson from Taxi.
He's also very lovely.
Ben Richards from Rockpool.
Yep.
Rocco Esposito from Vudemon. Andrew Philippot from the Press Club and Sebastian from the Royal Mail.
My God, what a list. That's elite.
So what we're doing is pairing a sommelier with each table to, I suppose, curate the evening with the guests.
Yep.
and not only handle the wines, because some of the wines will be aged.
And
we'll
decanting and business.
And with some of those top-end wines and aged wines, the timing is imperative.
Absolutely.
So I think it'll be really quite a fascinating
adventure.
You know, what would you take? Have you got a bottle at home that you'd take?
Leave that up to the other experts in our family, but I think that's an amazing opportunity though to have that specialised service and obviously for an amazing cause.
And I think we'll have a bit of fun as well with Peter and his team.
I hosted Peter for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival Masterclass up in the Langham, and he's just a joy to. He presents really well. He's very open to getting amongst it. So yeah, he's a good guy. That sort of brings us across to another thing that I wanted to address with you, Emma. Talking about cure for cancer, are there foods that we should avoid that we know are carcinogens, or is this another great big grey area?
Look, I think that there is an incredible depth of research going into, you know, what to eat to prevent cancer. And also, unfortunately, for people that do have cancer and then are cancer survivors, you know, should you be changing your diet? So there's quite a number of levels there, and particularly things with, you know, breast cancer. There's often talk about soy foods, whether you should or shouldn't if you're a breast cancer survivor. Just for the whole population, though, obviously our, you know, dietary guidelines for Australia, the government have set guidelines around a lot of research, and we know that there's a very protective diet you can eat. It's really a diet high in plant foods, a really rich plant foods. We know there's something about plant foods, those phytochemicals or those antioxidants that are very protective.
And these are some of the superfoods. And if we talk about superfoods, you think things like blueberries and broccoli.
Right.
And
but often, you know, particularly with our collective love of being, you know, local foodies, you know, we often hear about the acai berry that's, you know, come from halfway around the world, when really our local grown berries can be just as high. And even a humble apple has a very high ORAC score, or an antioxidant score. So, you know, it's really about a super diet, as opposed to one magic bullet superfood. It's about a really plant-rich diet. It's not about strictly being vegetarian, but it's certainly about...
I couldn't do that for a second.
Yeah, no, well, I'm not a vegetarian either, but, you know, it's about lots of colour, filling your plates with lots of variety, eating in season, so you're getting... and there is a little bit of research on organic produce potentially having some higher antioxidant levels as well. So that's the protective side. Mm. We do hear about, unfortunately, alcohol as being, you know, potential risk for cancer.
But alcohol is... And again, this is why I wanted to ask this question, because... Every other week there is a story that is in the health section of the newspaper or whatever, where, you know, this week we shouldn't be eating avocados because they're terribly bad for us. And next week, avocados, all of a sudden we know they're full of a particular good thing. Red wine.
On or off the menu,
Can help in reducing some incidence of some diseases, heart disease, that sort of thing. But then we find that potentially it can be a carcinogen. I mean, how do we digest all of that and work out what is and what is not? Is it just about moderation and everything in moderation?
That's right. I think people get quite annoyed with us dietitians that we change our mind. And I always try and remind people that nutrition and the study of, you know, health and disease links, it's a science. So we accept medical advances. You know, we hope that there'll be, you know, fantastic medical advances. Sometimes we think, well, we don't, you know, we know a lot more about heart disease and cancer than we did 20 years ago. So things do change. Mm. The red wine story is that there is a strengthened relationship between, sorry, not red wine, all alcohol and cancer. Yes. So it's not just wine. There is...
that's a bad thing. Why am I cheering?
It's alcohol. And, you know, really now our government guidelines is that they've brought it down so that it used to be 4 standard drinks for men and 2 for women a day was the recommendations. They've actually brought that back to 2 standard drinks for all. But as I said, this is a general, you know, population-based approach based on a pool of science. And you really need to look at, you know, your own things. The other things that come up with cancer are like smoking. Unfortunately, you know, our lovely big boy barbecues and our smoking is all the rage at the moment. But there is
cigarette smoking.
Smoked and cured products. There is a formation of some compounds. One's called nitrosamines or nitrates you'll hear about. But again, you know, the studies are on populations that might have eaten a huge amount of those foods. Often the studies are on in America, where their meat supply is very different to how our you know, our grass-fed beef and the way that we eat and purchase you know, meat in Australia is very different. So again, it's all about moderation, but I would go easy on processed meats and smoked meats, and certainly not overcharring your meat on the barbecue on a grill.
See, smoked meats, bacon,
all the good bits.
Yeah, I know. And I do like a bit of caramelization of my meat once it comes off the grill.
Well, look, I did the old maple syrup bacon last weekend for our Sunday fry up. And the thing is, it's not about never having those foods. It's
not
probably
having
about
it every day.
It's not putting ham in your kid's sandwich every day for lunch. It's about giving them some variety. Mm. And really, any good health message is about variety these days. So you can still have your bacon and your prosciutto on your pizza.
Oh, good. good. What are some of the things that you run across as a chef? And obviously you eat out to experience what your competitors or your peers are doing. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things you run across most that people say I can't have or I shouldn't have, or do you just mind your own business and tell them to bugger off?
No, what in my restaurants or yeah it's interesting. I think the increase of allergens and diets that have come up, you know, like I said earlier, it's increased in the last 3 years. But I think dairy-free diets are really quite at the fore. I'm finding more and more people are having reactions to dairy.
But see, my concern with the lack of dairy is then there is high calcium in dairy foods that our body needs to prevent osteoporosis when we are advancing in our years.
Yes, it's interesting dairy because, as we've all discussed, you know, people are a little bit more cautious when they eat out and what they say that they're allergic to. Or they might even have some people, you know, obviously have a food dislike and they'll say they really don't want to have that food. So they'll say, I'm allergic to it. And with dairy, we know that you can be allergic to the protein in milk and dairy foods, or you can have an intolerance to the milk sugar. So people with a lactose intolerance, they actually can have yogurts with probiotics in them. They can actually have a lot of cheese is very low in lactose, particularly the hard cheeses. So they might say, I can't have any dairy. But when you actually probe them a little bit more, or you see them eating off the cheese platter, what they mean is they can't have a huge dairy dessert. So it's different. But Andrew and I were talking on the way in about fructose and FODMAP diets is another area that's very more common these days. And I think particularly the chefs in Melbourne are more aware because Monash University is actually one of the world leaders in this research. So a lot of more patients are here in Melbourne, therefore a lot more people are eating out.
So with fructose, if you've obviously been talking about this, what have you discovered that fructose is?
Well, fructose
we know is the sugar in fruit.
Just seeing more of, and it's quite restrictive, the diet. And I think we find it's we usually ask the guests actually what they can eat.
Because it's things like onions and...
Yeah, look, the FODMAP is this acronym for this long list of words that really stand for the little sugar molecules that people malabsorb. So it's some of these foods that it's in excess fructose, lactose, other things called fructan. So it comes up in garlic, it comes up in onions, it comes up in... Most people will avoid lactose as well. A lot of people will be gluten-free as well. And
God, what
everyone
the bloody
will be
hell
different.
Do they eat? Lettuce?
Well, it is tricky. It is tricky. And as I said, the Sue Shepherd and also Jane Muir's team at Monash University, it really, a lot of it's been applied to people that have that irritable bowel syndrome. So 20 years ago, people went to their gastroenterologist and said, oh, look, I just, you know, I feel
bloated,
tired, I feel bloated, I can't.
Yes.
And they would have just said, we didn't really have a lot of treatment for them. We really said, you know, do some yoga and meditation, control your stress, try and find out the trigger foods. And really, for these people were debilitated.
Have you ever seen a person do yoga that has an irritable bowel syndrome problem? Let me tell you.
In the middle of the restaurant.
In the middle of the yoga class. Yeah. It is 18 minutes to 2 here on Cravings. Another quick message. Hi, Daryl from Elphington has called to say that he's got an aversion to supermarkets. And good for you, Daryl. He said there's a lovely market near the train station, obviously in Elphington, that has the most wonderful fruit and vegetables, and a butchers that have really tender steaks and make their own sausages. The prices and quality are great. Highly recommended. Thank you, Daryl. And that's something they want to come back to after we play these messages. I just want to talk about the common sense approach to produce. And Andrew, I know that's something that your restaurants are very, very focused on. 17 minutes to 2 here on Cravings. 0427JOY949 is the SMS. You can email onair@joy.org.au or send a tweet to cravings_joy949.
Melbourne's biggest gay voice has a fresh new sound.
Fresh new sound.
Joy 94.9.
That was Canyons with When I See You Again, another fairly new Australian band, a couple of boys from WA, and you can find that on the third series of Offspring, their music from the show. We were just talking about Asher Kelly when we We're listening to that song because I have a bit of a thing for her, as many people know. It is 12 minutes to 2 here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. The boys from Fender Bender will join you shortly and talk about all things cars. And we've just had another message, and Emma Sterling is one of my guests. She's the cooking dietitian. She's a nutritionist, and we're talking all things allergens and intolerances. Also, in the studio is Andrew McConnell. We were coming back to talk about the fresh produce, which I think is probably going to be the answer to a lot of these questions. Hi, guys. Could I please get your opinions on refined sugars? I'm on a refined sugar-free diet and have never felt better. I found it was all added to all packaged food. That's from Bilal in Glenroy. Emma, refined sugar.
Yeah, look, it's a pretty hot one at the moment, the sugar-free diet. There's a lot of, even some celebrities championing the cause. As a dietitian, you know, I really, where we look at the science, and particularly, you know, when looking at the latest government dietary guidelines, we need to be limiting our added sugar, because just from a good health perspective.
And just not whacking sugar in your tea and coffee.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no real definite link between sugar as the big, bad and evil substance. You know, cane sugar, if you, you know, you want to add a bit of sugar to your Weet-Bix in the morning, or brown sugar
and
to your porridge.
Do you use raw sugar?
Look, really, from a nutrition perspective, there's no major difference. Obviously, if you want to be a purist and have a product that's less refined, obviously look for, you know, an organic brown sugar. Mm.
But brown sugar is generally white sugar that's just had some molasses added to it.
That's right. That's right. So really, sugar is sugar. Mm. From a nutrition point of view, we don't need a lot of it in our diet. We don't need the extra energy. We don't need it to survive, because we get it naturally from other foods.
And it comes a lot from fruit and vegetables. Which sort of brings us
to carbohydrates are broken down from other foods, but you know, it does help the whole grains go down, particularly with my young kids. You know, I certainly don't expect them to eat a plain cereal without a little bit of honey or maple syrup or sugar on top.
I'm a big fan of putting Baileys on my Cocoa Pops in the morning. Another question. Hi, Pete. Can any allergens be neutralised? Ditto intolerance causing chemicals, or is avoidance the only option?
Oh, that's a great question, Marty. We certainly know with allergens that people, particularly young children, can outgrow them. So, you know, certainly not all allergens that you're diagnosed in childhood you'll have into adult life. So that's the good news for any families that are just facing this for the first time. With intolerances, it often is really about avoidance. So unfortunately, we don't have any magic neutralising, you know, zap gun at the moment, but certainly seeing an expert. Well, yeah, look, we are looking at different pharmacotherapy and different treatment options. As I said, the diagnosis of things like that fructose FODMAP diet, you can now go and have a hydrogen breath test where they actually measure what your body is producing or what gases are producing from the gut. So
dangerous in my
house. Yeah, look, a lot more going on. But no, certainly it's at the moment it's more about avoiding those and still looking to have a healthy, balanced diet and enjoy way of eating from other foods,
And that brings me around to the point that I was making just before we heard that song. It's all about buying what is seasonal, where you understand and know the provenance of the food, where you can talk to the grower rather than reading a piece of information on a plastic bag. And Andrew, I know this is something that all of your restaurants are very, very focused on, is seasonal, good produce.
Yeah, it's key to everything we do. Mm. But just keeping on the topic of the produce and the supermarkets and this quite hot topic, you can do the full circle back to what we were talking about earlier about children being allowed to play in the sandpit and being exposed to germs. And I think what's happened over the years is the over-pasteurisation of a lot of the foods that we now buy through a lot of these commercial outlets, which, you know, may or may not, a lot of people will disagree, but I believe it may have kind of contributed to the situation.
And things like additives to poultry to make them grow quicker, that's obviously had an effect on an entire generation of people.
Yeah, look, we certainly know that, you know, there is really quite strict rules around use of hormones, and certainly no, you know, use of hormones in poultry for probably 40 years in Australia. But antibiotics and different things are obviously used to keep chickens well, you know, when they're being raised. And, you know, I agree. I'm a little bit of a purist. I like to keep as close to the natural source as possible. I like to know the provenance of my food as well. I think that the big dilemma for us all is just feeding the masses of our population. And I mean, supermarkets are not going to go away. So
much,
it's really
much
great.
To my chagrin, let me tell you. a message, Andrew, from the lovely folk at the Royal Mail Hotel. They tune in every Saturday from 1 o'clock until 2.
Nice.
We say hello to the folk at the Royal Mail. They're talking about the world's best BYO event. So get on board, of course, Sebastian Crowther, their sommelier that's joining you at that event.
Correct. And the Royal Mail, you know, really pioneer and really champion that connection to Providence.
And grow a lot of their own stuff. And I guess it's probably far more sensible to go to a farmer's market and talk to producers and growers and buy your fruit and your vegetables and your meats and your dairy rather than calling via one of the two majors and just picking up what you don't really know about.
And better still, taking your kids on a regional road trip and visiting a farm and visiting a farm gate.
Because and then calling into the
Royal
Mail.
It's not just speaking to the farmer, it's educating our kids on where the food comes from. I mean, you know, amazing surveys they do on kids. Where does the milk come from? Where do potatoes? You know, they don't know.
Where do peas come from? The plastic bag out of the freezer?
That's right. Mm. So, you know, food education should start at a very young age with children. And I really, you know, fundamentally believe that the good health and nutrition will shine through if you're, you know, teaching kids about that, you know, the provenance of food, where it comes from to start with.
Andrew, are kids more educated now? You've done a spot on MasterChef before, haven't you? And I think shows like that have had a big impact on the way young people think about food. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you hear 7-year-olds using terms like plating up and all of those restaurant terms. Do you think the populace is more educated because of those programs around food?
I think, you know, there's a lot of media that has covered a lot of aspects of the industry and food in many different mediums, and it has made a huge impact on people's understanding across the board, but particularly children have really jumped on it. And I think through a lot of the schools now as well with various programming.
Things like Stephanie Alexander's Kitchen Garden Foundation.
Yeah, and also lots of schools who don't have access to that foundation are also being quite active in creating their own school beds and bringing back, you know, the good old home economic cooking.
And raising chickens on the school property and all of that to get eggs and what have you. An interesting message here from Lawrence, who's sent in this via the Joy 94.9 app for both iPhone and Android. Vegetarian here, and I wanted to share an experience about my son as a preschooler. Always been huge on nutrition here and alternate therapies. He went to a Montessori school and the teacher was actually the one that picked it up and gave me heaps of info. He used to get very hyperactive after picking out at the fruit table. Temporarily had him gluten-free, dairy-free, and all fruits and other foods high in salicylates. I hope that's the right way to say that.
Salicylates, yeah.
Salicylates, good enough. Gradually reintroduced him some new foods, except for the fruits he really shouldn't have, and he's been fine ever since. He naturally makes great choices on his own now when we eat out. Thank you, Lawrence. And I think that's it's a good message and sort of ties into what we were just talking about. The kids now have a far better understanding than ever
absolutely.
Before.
Absolutely. Oh, my 7-year-old wanted the croque and bush for the birthday cake. I mean, this is the thing. There's a lot of interesting research about. Are we creating? We're certainly creating more food awareness, and I think that's only can be a good thing. I hope people get off the couch and, become real cooks and not just couch potato watchers as well. Because all evidence is showing that we definitely are heading people back into the kitchen, and particularly the younger generation are very interested in food, which I think is fabulous.
Which is a wonderful thing to do.
How did the croque and bush go?
Sorry, didn't quite go there. We did the gymnastics beam long log cake instead. Brilliant. The Barbie doll on the top.
Guys, we have to wrap up. Thank you both for joining me and sort of opening up the discussion, the dialogue around allergies and intolerances. Andrew, let's plug this event again. It is on at Cutler & Co. on the 16th of July. Tickets still available via curecanceraustralia.org. And yourself and Peter Gilmore will be hosting the acting. And as we said, that wonderful list of songs, bring along your favourite bottle of wine and support an extraordinary charity. People can also go to any one of your 4 websites.
Correct.
Do you want to run them through?
Run through the restaurants. We've got Golden Fields.
The websites?
Goldenfields.com.au.
Yep.
Cutler & Co. again. Ampersand. No symbols.
Yep.
Buildersarmshotel.com.au.
Yep.
And Cumulus Inc. God, I forgot it.
My favourite.
Still has that roasted shoulder of lamb.
It's the freaka salad. I've told all the international dietitian visitors. I said to Andrew, there's dietitians all around America raving about his freaka salad. He doesn't realise.
That's a staple.
And Emma, people want to know more about diet and nutrition. They can certainly go to your website.
Yeah, my blog and website is scoopnutrition.com. But certainly in the area of allergens and intolerances, Anaphylaxis Australia is a fantastic resource. course there at allergyfacts.org.au. Also Celiac Australia, which is celiac.org.au. And if you want to see an expert, seek out an accredited practicing dietitian at daa.asn.au.
And we always encourage that people do seek out accredited folk. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining me. Thank you to all of our correspondents via SMS, email, the Joy app and Twitter. We're going to have a couple of messages and the boys will be in to drive you through until 3 o'clock on Fender Benders. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Emma. This has been Cravings on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.